This is a week where they mark times of struggle in their past. Jews tell of the enslaved Hebrew people for whom Moses cried out to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." Christians tell of the broken Jesus who suffers betrayal and the pain of violent death. In our world and in our own lives, we recognize that there is struggle and brokenness as well. Today we acknowledge that we must engage not only with the good times in our lives, but with the struggles as well. And I invite, is Greg Jones? There he is. You're not in your usual spot. Good morning, Greg. Greg comes forward to light our chalice. I invite you to join in the unison words of chalice lighting, which this morning are taken from the Passover Haggadah. May the light we kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal, not to harm, to help, not to hinder, to bless, not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom. Please be seated and attentive to a message for all ages from our Director of Religious Education.
Good morning. I am going to tell you a story about Passover, which is a holiday celebrated by people who are Jewish, and it starts tomorrow night. Though if you are coming to the Seder tonight, you're actually going to start it tonight. A long time ago, there was a man named Moses who lived in a country where some people, who were called the Israelites, lived in the same land as some other people called the Egyptians. Unfortunately, the Egyptians treated the Israelites really poorly and made them into slaves. The ruler of the Egyptians was called the Pharaoh. There was a man at that time named Moses who didn't like how Pharaoh and his people treated the Israelites, but he didn't know how to help them. But then one day, when Moses lived in a place called Midian and was a shepherd for his father-in-law, suddenly something extraordinary happened. On that day, a lamb ran away from the rest of the flock. Moses chased after it and saw a really strange sight. A bush was covered in fire, yet the bush wasn't being burnt up by the flames. Amazed, Moses drew closer, and all of a sudden heard the voice of God speaking to him. "Moses, go down to Egypt and tell Pharaoh to let my people go." So Moses and his brother Aaron went to the Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go, let the Israelites go." But Pharaoh just laughed at them. Then they told the Pharaoh that God would send down 10 plagues if he didn't listen to them. But the Pharaoh didn't believe them. And a plague is a terrible thing that causes great harm across a whole land. Well, soon, plague after plague struck the Egyptians, each one of them more shocking than the next. There was blood that came down from the sky and frogs, lice, wild animals that attacked things, sick animals, boils, hail, locust, darkness. And the final plague, when they hadn't listened to the other 9, was that the firstborn child of each son, The firstborn child of each family was sentenced to die. Finally, Pharaoh had enough of this, especially as he was a firstborn son. And he ran frantically through the streets of Egypt, searching for Moses. "Go," he yelled, "and take all the Jews with you before we all die." Moses sent word to all the Israelites. "The time has come," he told them. "Grab your bags and get ready to leave. Don't wait for your bread to rise. Just go." The Jews left Egypt with sacks on their backs, rejoicing and full of faith. Well, the next day, Pharaoh decided that he had made a mistake and that he and the Egyptians must find the Israelites and recapture them. During that time, the Israelites had walked until they reached the sea, and there they were stopped, and they were trapped. They could see the Egyptian army chasing towards them with swords in their hands. But once again, God spoke to Moses and told him to stretch his arm out over the water. And you know what happened? All at once, the water just split, and there was dry land. And so all the Israelites walked over that dry land to the other side of the sea. And then the Egyptians are like, "Great, we're going to still keep chasing them." And guess what happened? As soon as they stepped where the dry land was, the sea came back and washed them all away. And finally, the Israelites were free. And today, Jews all over the world remember this event by celebrating Passover together each year. And that's the story of Passover.
Today we'll enter into our time of silent prayer and meditation in song. It's a gospel song, and Mike is going to lead us in it. It's number 1015 in the turquoise supplement. And it's new, but it's great. You can remain seated.
Though days be dark with storms and burdens weigh my heart, though troubles wait at every turn, I know I can go on. When sorrow heals my soul and burdens make me strong, though troubles wait at every turn, I know I can go on. My sister in my heart, my brother in my song, though troubles wait at every turn, I know I can go on. And though the journey is long, the destination is near, though troubles wait at every turn, I know I can go on. So brothers, take my hand, and sisters, sing my song. When hope awaits at every turn, I know we will go on.
Now, I'd like you to be attentive to words from Diane Miller on an issue of social justice.
Hi, good morning. I'm Diane Miller, and I'd like to tell you about Rhea House. Rhea, R for ready. I means to inspire, and A means to act. It is the dream come into reality of Heather Whiteman, a former shelter manager of Voices Against Violence, aspiring to build a home community in a quiet part of Mentor West, Central Massachusetts, for adult women coming out of the life of human trafficking and sexual exploitation. Let me give you some of the numbers. Up to 27 million men, women, and children are globally trafficked every year. 80% of those who are trafficked are sexual slaves. 98% of sexually exploited people are women and children. And it is estimated that at least 8 million children worldwide go missing each year. That's 22,000 children a day. Every year it's estimated that 17,000 foreign nationalists, mostly women and children, are brought into the U.S. as slaves, human trafficked individuals for the purpose of sexual and labor exploitation. And then this is the hard part to believe. It is reported that there are more people today who are slaves than the total throughout history. Just like domestic violence, these numbers are probably low because the abusers, the pimps, the Johns, and others rely on us to keep these subjects quiet and underground. Our mission at Rhea House is to provide a safe, caring, compassionate home community for the victims. Women who are healing from the most severe forms of trauma caused from commercial sexual exploitation and the ravages of human slavery and trafficking will be achieved. Rhea House will be inclusive of those who have demonstrated a level of readiness to begin an intensive healing journey. This will all take place within a shared living environment that values love, compassion, forgiveness, nonviolence, discipline, self-care, and self-discovery. The home will be inclusive of any person's age, their race, ethnic background, religion, income, education, country of origin, citizenship, or political affiliation, as well as sexual orientation or gender identity. I call this the UU approach. So what can we do to get Rhea House moving forward? The first thing is more education around what is sexual exploitation and human trafficking. Some of us see each of these as violence against women. Some of us do not. Many of us have our own understandings of the roles that violence and poverty, addiction and child abuse, neglect and racism play in our society. Some of us are just learning, while others of us just haven't thought about it very much. Right now, I'm not asking you for anything but your awareness. There are increasingly more articles in the media, a special series on WGBH radio by Philip Martin, a book published by the husband-wife team called Half the Sky, and many, many others are examples. You, too, will now be paying attention so that their silent voices can be heard. Beginning today, you, too, will be more of what is out there and what can be done. I have more information over at Coffee Hour, and thanks for your attention.
Transitis per via, o vos omnes, qui transitis per via, attendite. Videte, si es dolor, sicut dolor meus. Suit me Dominus desolata. Tota die morum. transitis per via. Ovos omnes qui transitis per via, attendite et videte.
I'd like to share with you a reading from Alice Walker's book, We Are the Ones We've Been Waiting For. It is the worst of times. It is the best of times. Try as I might, I cannot find a more appropriate opening to this volume. It helps tremendously that these words have been spoken before, and thanks to Charles Dickens, written at the beginning of A Tale of Two Cities. Perhaps they have been spoken, written, thought, an endless number of times throughout human history. It is the worst of times because it feels as though the very earth is being stolen from us, by us, the land and air poisoned, the water polluted, the animals disappeared, humans degraded and misguided, wars everywhere. It is the best of times because we've entered into a period, if we can bring ourselves to pay attention, of great clarity as to cause and effect. A blessing when we consider how much suffering human beings have endured in previous millennia without a clue of its cause. Gods and goddesses were no doubt created to fill this gap, because we can now see in every crevice of the globe, and because we are free to explore previously unexplored crevices in our own hearts and minds, it is inevitable that everything we have needed to comprehend in order to survive, everything that we have needed to understand in the most basic of ways will be illuminated now. We have only to open our eyes and awaken to our predicament, to see that we are, alas, a huge part of our problem. However, we live in a time of global enlightenment. This alone should make us shout for joy. As she acknowledged, Alice Walker borrowed the opening words of her 2006 book from Unitarian Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities. Written in the mid-19th century, Dickens began, "It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epic of belief. It was the epic of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair." Does that not strike you as odd? How can it be both? At first glance, at least, these words would seem to be contradictory statements about the state of affairs in the world or in our personal lives. Logically, it does not seem to make sense to assert these two statements at exactly the same time. We know that in our lives that there are good times and there are not so good times. But we don't usually think of them as being at the same time. When asked how things are, perhaps we mentally add up the pluses and the minuses and come to one conclusion. It's a good time in my life or it's not. Yet, when we hear those words, it's the worst of times, it's the best of times, back to back at the same time. At another level, we know profoundly that there is truth there. If Alice Walker's observation is right, it's a truth that's been recognized throughout history. A truth that reminds us that joys and sorrows are intertwined, that success and failure, suffering and healing, the world's great accomplishments and the world's evil and horrible events do not visit us separately, but often at the same time, even in the same breath. Walker invites us to awaken to our predicament, to open our eyes to gain clarity on the situation. In our daily world, we often hear it said that we should be upbeat and focus on just the good things in our life. And for most of us, that seems like pretty good advice. But what about giving some space, some bandwidth, if you will, to the other side of life, to those bad times that exist right along with the good times? In his poem, The Guest House, the Sufi Muslim poet and spiritual leader Rumi admonishes us to welcome and entertain all guests that come to us, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably, he says. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Our first response is probably not to want to do this. As religious liberals, our instinct is to move quickly from the bad times to the good times, not to dwell on them. Depending upon the situation, maybe we deny them or we minimize them or we avoid them. Always see the good, we say to ourselves. We are a faith tradition that preaches hope and optimism, and I am glad of that. Next week is Easter, and it's the great time to celebrate that hope, to celebrate overcoming obstacles in our life, no matter how great. But I don't think we should go there too quickly. The story of Passover reminds us of the long suffering that finally leads to freedom. My question is, do we engage sufficiently with the struggle and the suffering that's also part of our world and every one of our lives? Or do we try to block it out and just move on? In our heads, we hear onward and upward, get over it, move on. But another voice says, not so fast. That's the message of this day and this week for Jews and Christians. The holidays that we celebrate this week teach us that we have to deal with the bad times, recognize the suffering, and spend some time with the struggles in our lives. I think it's generally not easy for Unitarian Universalists, especially, to go there. A friend of mine was a paid singer in a choir in one of our wealthiest Unitarian Universalist churches. And one day he said to me, "I'm sick of singing about happy birds and blooming flowers. Life isn't always that way. Where are the hymns that acknowledge struggle? There's meaning in the struggle. Sometimes there's even beauty in the struggle." The music today was intentionally selected to call attention to struggles in our ancient religious history and in our lives today. You know, it's not surprising that two of the hymns we sang come from the African-American traditions, struggle for freedom. One of them, the text literally speaks about the struggle of the ancient Israelites. Those slaves identified with their ancient counterparts. They knew that others had struggled before them for freedom. There was something about identifying your struggle with someone else's struggle that's powerful. You know, and we just sang, wade in the water, children. God's going to trouble the water. You can't walk around or build a bridge over this troubled water. You have to wade in it. Are you willing to get your feet wet in the struggle? Don't get me wrong. I hope you know that by now I am not a preacher of gloom and doom, and I certainly don't want to give up our positive message of hope. But I think in liberal religion there is a certain discomfort with focusing on the worst of times, and I think we need to talk about it. We're people of optimism and great hope, and of course that's good. But I say that with some caution because I do believe we need to have our eyes opened to the worst of times as well, and we need to spend some time there too. We need to visit with our struggles and see where they take us, for they have something to teach too. I know there are times when maybe it's too painful to do that and we need to block them out for a while, but if we're to be fully engaged with our life and find all the blessings it has to bring, we'll have to return to the struggles that we've glossed over. This is the time of year when two of our great faith traditions focus on the struggle of their people, or we might say the worst of their times. They don't gloss over them. They dig into them. And Passover, which we'll celebrate here tonight in a Seder meal, and you're still invited even if you're not signed up to come to that. But in that Seder meal, we'll celebrate the suffering of Hebrew slaves under harsh rule of Pharaoh. That's where it begins. And in response to that suffering, God sends 10 plagues, and we witness more suffering, the suffering of Egyptians. Yet in the very midst of that story of great suffering, there's something else that happens. Something inspiring comes. It swells up in people in response to the suffering. They realize their hope of freedom in the midst of suffering. Today is Palm Sunday on the Christian calendar, the day when Jesus rides triumphantly into Jerusalem, greeted with crowds waving palm branches in welcome. Surely the best of times in his ministry, for sure. But at the same moment, those who are threatened by his teachings are conspiring to kill him. And within days, his followers flee and he's crucified. Undoubtedly the worst of times for his religious movement. But the larger story doesn't end there. Next week on Easter, we'll talk about where that story takes us. Let's say for today, what carries these traditions forward to us is found in their embrace of both the worst of times and the best of times. You know, it's interesting that this week, where our focus is on Judaism and Christianity, it is a central tenet of Buddhism that connects them. And that is the acknowledgement of the suffering of the world. And it is the advice of a Muslim that tells us what to do with that suffering. Invite it into your life. Denial is not the answer. This message is not something that was lived once long ago, but rather one we experience in our world today, and that we live in our lives every day. I see it so often in my ministry. I see it in my life. Your career is going great. You have the best year at work ever. It's the best of times. But at the same time, you go to the doctor. He finds something seriously wrong. You have tests. You wait for results. They say you have cancer. It's the worst of times. Your family life is great. Kids are happy, doing well in school. You and your spouse are really enjoying life. The best of times. Then you lose your job. The worst of times. You experience love. The best of times. And then someone you love dies. The worst of times. You're recognized for some great accomplishment. The best of times. And then someone you trust betrays you. the worst of times. Those things of which I speak, they're not made up. There are our lives right here. Our stories that I've come to know in my ministry to you over the past 11 years. And they're Passover stories. And they're Palm Sunday stories. Here each week we light those candles right there for joys and sorrows. And think about how often someone lights two candles, one of each, one for the best of times and one for the worst of times. You see, the life of our community is made up collectively of the worst of times and the best of times being held together. Once someone said to me, I feel guilty lighting a candle for joy after someone has just expressed an extreme sorrow. Or the other way around, I've heard it. Everyone had just celebrated such a joy that I didn't want to put a damper on things. Please don't feel that way. That time in our service is a weekly reminder that collectively for us, it is always the best of times and the worst of times. Always. So why this ritual? Why not just sing happy, upbeat songs all the time? Why do we have to welcome it all, as Rumi said? Well, a woman that I admire, and I think many of you did, the late Elizabeth Edwards, pointed out that in all she went through, from the loss of a child to cancer to infidelity, she'd learned just two lessons. First, there will always be heartache and struggle. Second, that people of goodwill can make a difference. The first, she said, is sad news. The second is inspiring. Speaking about her engagement with other parents who had lost a child, she said something like this. They've not forgotten the horrible event. It's more meaningful when you mention it, when you remember the child they lost, when you let them know you do remember and you embrace their pain. They don't expect you to make it go away. They do hope you can be with them in sadness. Not just in our lives, but also in the lives of others, we need to be willing to engage the pain and not sugarcoat it with happy thoughts. But it should be said that it can be the other way for us too. We don't want to take our engagement with the struggle with the worst of things so far that we can't see that right in our midst are also the best of times right at the same time. And that's second part of that reading from Alice Walker. She's telling us that on the global scale, we must give our deep and full attention to the fact that we are in some bad times. Open our eyes, she says, and see that, alas, we are a huge part of the problem. But don't stop there, she says. Look at the things in our time that are full of promise and hope. The coexistence of the worst of times and the best of times is not only true in our personal lives and in the lives of our community or our church collectively, but also at the level of our nation and the world. It feels on that level like the worst of times because children have again been slaughtered and our elected officials can't hear the people screaming, stop gun violence, and pass tough laws that eliminate private ownership of assault weapons and really restrict who can own a gun. It feels like the worst of times when we see our world so full of hate, where terrorists blow themselves up and with ever-increasing frequency kill more and more innocent people. Feels like the worst of times when we see environmental destruction increasing at an alarming rate. It seems like the worst of times when we see women and girls robbed of their human rights because of their sex, when we see there is still human slavery, trafficking in human beings in our world, maybe greater than ever before. But now is also the best of times. Think of the good. The tide has turned on rights for gay, lesbian, and transgender folks, and most Americans now support marriage equality. It's the best of times where medical science can cure or treat so many diseases that even a few years ago were fatal. It's the best of times when a young Muslim girl from Pakistan, after being shot in the head for going to school and advocating that, is brought to England and miraculously treated and is now able to speak out with courage again for the rights of girls in her country to get educated. It's the best of times when we have the know-how to generate our power without harming our planet, where we have the knowledge to live in harmony with our environment. There are people doing great things for the environment, against war, people curing disease, feeding the hungry. You know, I don't always see that nightly on the news, but it's happening too. Right alongside, totally intertwined with the bad stuff. The worst of times and the best of times are joined at the hip. In Alice Walker's words, there's an underlying realization that we can't fully appreciate the light until we visit the darkness. But there's more than that. There's also the recognition that it's not one time or the other, that it's not necessarily sequential. To live fully, to move forward, to live as a whole and not a partial person, we need to hold on to both in our lives, even at the same time. When we do, we come to an acceptance of the depth of suffering, either personal or global, but also we find the inspiration and gratitude to move beyond that. As Alice Walker said, perhaps those words, it's the worst of times, it's the best of times, have been spoken or written through an endless number of times throughout humanity. It is the way it is. Our task is to live fully engaged with both. We don't just bask in the good times or wallow in the sorrows, but we live in the tension they create. How we bring them together is the truest test of our character. How we reach out to others and help them do the same is the truest test of our ministry. And how we hold them together as we think about and act for justice and peace in our world is where our best hope for the future will be found.